And I think radio is the place, the perfect place for that to happen.
Anything else you'd like to add or anything else that I didn't ask?
Well, you know, I think the listeners that are listening to your
Hi, this is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
Monday, April 4th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Tune in the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, actions, speeches, and positions of the Hudson Valley Congressional Delegation and the candidates running to replace them. 10 a.m. it's time to get on the Afrosonic Taxi with tracks this week from Sahar Algan Trio, Azizi Brahim, and Thomas Mamfuo, among others. Then at 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites with Randy Newman, Lucinda Williams, Leon Russell, and others, live from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson, where WGXC has a basement studio on Warren Street. At noon, it's time for the Deep Threes program after the local news with Patti Smith, Abigail Mead, and Sonic Youth featured. Vital Weekly at 2 p.m. has brand new music from around the world, including tracks this week from Joseph Nekvatal, Christiana Luciani, and the Pathos Trio. At 4 p.m., Kieran Riley hosts the WGXC Afternoon Show live from Western Massachusetts. Marjorie Cohen is the attorney guest on the Law & Sorter Show at 7 p.m. on the radio. And Nick and Lisa are live in Accra with Radiate Point at 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM WGXC. Jacob Leisler Institute for the Study of Early New York History is giving out a $500 scholarship in memory of Ruth Pawanka, an influential and well-known local historian. The award will go to a student locally looking to further their education in history. The scholarship is available to college-bound seniors graduating from a Columbia County school, and applications are due by May 1st. For more information and application guidelines, you can contact the Leisler Institute at info@jacobleiserinstitute.org. Go to the WGXC community calendar online for a link to this scholarship award information and listings of all sorts of other local community events.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Greene Media that the former owner and publisher of the Daily Mail, Gunther Hafner, died March 11th in Queensbury at the age of 82. Friends and colleagues are remembering Hafner as an enterprising and commanding presence in Greene County. Born in January 1940, Hafner graduated from Catskill High School and went to serve 4 years in the U.S. Navy before returning to Greene County to launch his career in the newspaper business. He was hired at the Daily Mail in 1961 to work in the mailroom. From there, made his way up in the company, then owned by the Conlin family of Connecticut. Hafner held a variety of jobs with the paper, working as the circulation manager, advertising manager, and general manager before moving into an ownership position. Current managing editor Raymond Pignone remembered Hafner as a hands-on publisher who was not afraid to roll up his sleeves to get the job done. Quote, Gunther was a very hard-working publisher, unquote, Pignone said. Quote, he started out as an advertising rep, but even when he was publisher, he would go out on the street with a camera and take news photos and photos for ads. He would go out and promote the paper and sell ads, even when he was the publisher, unquote. Hafner retired in 1989 and sold the publication to the Johnson Newspaper Corporation. He was a longtime fixture in the Catskill community with memberships with the Catskill Elks Club, the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Catskill Rotary Club, and the Catskill Merchants Association. He also sponsored local sports organizations, including the Catskill Little League. Hafner is survived by his wife Lucille, son Mark, daughters Stacy and Kim Bongiorno, as well as 9 grandchildren. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that criminal charges have been dropped against former Caro Durham Elementary School teacher Melissa Azing Sakikoshi, arrested last year in connection to what authorities characterized as a, quote, large-scale narcotics operation, unquote. Sakikoshi, 41, of Coxsackie, was charged by state police in May 2021 with driving while ability impaired by drugs and seventh-degree criminal possession of a controlled substance, a misdemeanor. This week, Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzone said the case against Sakishi had been, quote, formally closed as the charges were withdrawn, unquote. The DA said, quote, there remains the possibility it could be reopened. That determination is yet to be made. But as for now, the court case is closed, unquote. Authorities are reportedly awaiting identification of the substance the former teacher was allegedly impaired by at the time of her arrest. Sakikoshi taught kindergarten at the time of her arrest, and she was subsequently placed on paid administrative leave. This week, Caro Durham Superintendent of Schools Michael Weatherby confirmed that she was no longer employed by the district, having resigned her position effective June 30, 2021. The probe that led to the charges against Sakikoshi resulted in the arrest of 7 other people, including a state trooper. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com. Rick Carlin reports for the Times-Union that historic Brody Mountain Ski Resort in the Berkshires seems to have an interested buyer. The broker handling the property, located 3 miles from Jiminy Creek in New Ashford, Massachusetts, says the sellers have an accepted offer on their 500-acre property and the sale could be finalized in the coming weeks. The property includes 3 ski lifts and was listed at $1.9 million. Mitch Murroff of Murroff Hospitality, who is handling the sale, declined to name the potential buyer or the offer amount. An issue that could impact the sale is a covenant attached in 1999 that supposedly prohibits, quote, public downhill skiing, unquote, on the property. It is unclear whether the covenant has an expiration date or if it remains in perpetuity. The Brody Resort dates to the 1930s. After several owners, it was purchased by the Fairbank Group, which owns and operates nearby Jiminy Peak. Fairbanks closed the ski operation in 2002, but a snow tubing park remained in place until 2007. The area was then sold to the Holiday Inn Silverleaf Company. Potential uses for the property include a private membership-based ski club, snowboarding or cross-country skiing, or redeveloped as a glamping site, an ATV track, an RV park, or for vacation homes. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
New York's game species are literally losing ground as human development and climate change is restricting their native habitats. A new report from the National Wildlife Federation finds that game species across the country lost, on average, 6.5 million acres of habitat over the past 2 decades. It's a trend advocates say will continue unless lawmakers take action. Aaron Kindle with the National Wildlife Federation says hunters and anglers are important partners when discussing the issue with legislators.
Hunters and anglers, the ones who go out and pursue those species, are the ones who are appropriate for finding the solutions, advocating for the solutions, talking to members of Congress, and getting this stuff happening.
Kindle says one possible solution to America's habitat loss is a so-called 30 by 30 target, which calls for restoring and preserving 30% of America's lands by 2030. The plan has earned the endorsement of the Biden-Harris administration, which has renamed the strategy as the America the Beautiful Initiative. Kindle says the 30 by 30 plan would provide an avenue to restore and rehabilitate the nation's lands and waters. He says restoring natural infrastructure such as rivers, forests, and wetlands would benefit everyone.
You have a healthy river with vegetation on both sides. It provides habitat, but it also flows floodwaters. It cleans the water before it gets to a human drinking water source.
Per the report, between 65 and 82 million acres of America's national forests are in need of restoration. In addition to the 30 by 30 plan outlined in Biden's America the Beautiful initiative, Congress is considering the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, which would allocate nearly $1.4 billion annually to states to implement habitat restoration and conservation strategies. For the New York News Connection, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC in ACRO with this week's WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 19th and 20th congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Representative Antonio Delgado has waded to a contentious state issue. Farm workers want to get paid overtime wages just like grocery workers and everyone else, while farm owners want to continue only paying overtime after 60 hours of work a week rather than 40. The State Department of Labor is moving to the 40-hour threshold for farm worker overtime, but getting stiff resistance from the capitalist farm owners. Delgado, who represents the 19th Congressional District, is now the first Democratic House member from New York against the farm workers getting overtime pay like everyone else. Delgado wrote in a letter to Governor Kathy Hochul on an issue where he does not have a vote, and I quote, "These farms have faced a difficult farm economy in recent years and severe market disruptions as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Lowering the overtime threshold from 60 to 40 hours adds another hardship for our farmers and may cause many to close their doors," end quote. The story does not quote any farm workers or anyone advocating on their behalf. But Delgado gets his say. He wrote, and I quote, "Rather than move forward with the wage board's decision, I urge you to work with farmers to find a better solution. Including farmer input will ensure potential changes are viable for farmers," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Phoebe Taylor-Vuolo reports for PBS station WSKG that Representative Antonio Delgado visited a Delaware County dairy farm last week. At Clark Farms Creamery near Delhi, fifth-generation dairy farmer Kyle Clark said supply chain issues have raised his operating costs. Clark said, and I quote, "The price of milk's definitely improved, especially in the last couple of months. But relative to the increase in input cost and even the availability of a lot of those things, it's not keeping up," end quote. Delgado said he is working to create more demand for milk. Delgado said, and I quote, "Making sure that our milk can go to our schools, milk can go to our hospitals, milk can go to our community centers. Wherever there's more localized opportunities to grow and build from, that should be the focus," end quote. Congressperson Delgado has co-sponsored legislation to provide whole milk in schools instead of 1% and fat-free milk, and also wants New York City to keep serving chocolate milk to students. Delgado, though, does not comment in the story about whether farm workers should get paid overtime the same way grocery store and other workers are paid when they exceed 40 hours a week. The Farm Bureau opposes farm workers getting overtime at 40 hours. Read more about this story at the WSKG website.
On April 1st, Representatives Antonio Delgado, Paul Tonko, and Sean Maloney voted for removing cannabis from the list of scheduled substances under the Controlled Substances Act. The measure, making cannabis legal across the country, passed 220 to 204 with only 3 Republicans voting with the majority. Republican Representative Elise Stefanik, who represents the Northern Hudson Valley, was not one of them. Similarly, on March 31st, Delgado, Tonko, and Maloney all voted for the Affordable Insulin Now Act, which would cap insulin prices at either $35 a month or 25% of an insurance plan's negotiated price, whichever is lower. Fortune magazine reports that in the United States, insulin costs on average 800% more than in other developed economies. The bill passed in the House of Representatives 232 to 193, with only 12 Republicans voting for the measure. Again, Stefanik was not one of them.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking this week's activities from Representative Paul Tonko and Representative Antonio Delgado, who both represent in Congress many of the citizens in the WGXC listening area. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories.
The long overdue Emmett Till anti-lynching law. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Biden signed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act into law Tuesday, culminating efforts to make lynching a federal crime that started over a century ago. Michelle Duster, the great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells, the legendary anti-lynching activist and pioneering African-American journalist, said at the signing ceremony,
"Since my great-grandmother's visit to the White House 124 years ago, there have been over 200 attempts to get legislation enacted. And 17 years ago, in 2005, my brother Dan spoke at the Senate press conference where they issued an apology for not passing the legislation. But we finally stand here today, generations later, to witness this historic moment."
Emmett Till should be alive today. Born on July 25, 1941, he would be 80 years old. Perhaps he would still be joking the way he did throughout his childhood. His mother, Mamie Till Mobley, wrote of Emmett, "For Emmett, life was laughter, and laughter was life-giving. There was so much joy in his carefree world that he just wanted to share with everyone around him," she said. Emmett Till, an African-American boy, was brutally murdered August 28, 1955, at the age of 14. He'd been accused of wolf whistling at Carolyn Bryant, a white woman, then dragged out of his great-uncle's home in Money, Mississippi, where his mother had sent him from Chicago for the summer. Several days later, his brutally beaten, disfigured body, weighted down with a 75-pound cotton gin fan tied to his body with barbed wire, was pulled out of the Tallahatchie River. The LaFleur County Sheriff attempted to force the immediate burial of Emmett Till, but Mamie intervened and paid almost a year's salary for his body to be shipped back to Chicago. There, the funeral director refused to open the box for her to view her son's corpse. "Give me a hammer," she demanded. He relented and allowed Mamie to view Emmett's mutilated remains. By then, the murder had sparked outrage across the nation. Mamie Till Mobley insisted that Emmett receive an open casket funeral. "Let the world see what I've seen," she said. 100,000 mourners lined up to pay respects. Jet magazine put a picture of Emmett in his casket, his head distended and deformed by violence, on the magazine's cover. The image went global and forced the people of the United States to witness the ravages of racism, the brutality of bigotry. Two suspects, Roy Bryant, the husband of the woman who claimed she'd been whistled at, and his half-brother, J.W. Milam, were arrested for the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till. Two brave activists from the Mississippi NAACP, Medgar Evers and Amzi Moore, had been involved since Till was reported missing, first looking for the lost boy, then seeking eyewitnesses to the murder. Despite the eyewitnesses they produced, an all-white, all-male jury acquitted the suspects. One member of the jury said they'd reached their decision within minutes, but waited an hour to appear as if they'd actually deliberated. Medgar Evers himself was later assassinated in the driveway of his home on June 12, 1963. After the acquittal, Bryant and Milam sold their story to Look magazine for $4,000, about the same amount that Mamie Till Mobley had paid to ship her son home, an equivalent to over $40,000 in 2022. Despite their confession to the magazine that they murdered Emmett, they couldn't be prosecuted due to constitutional double jeopardy protections. Had a federal anti-lynching law existed at the time, they could have been charged. Emmett Till's murder galvanized the civil rights movement. Months later, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on the bus in Montgomery, Alabama. When asked why she refused to go to the rear of the bus, she said, "I thought of Emmett Till, and I just couldn't go back." A. Philip Randolph, the renowned African-American labor organizer and civil rights activist, chose the 8th anniversary of Emmett Till's death, August 28, 1963, for the March on Washington, where Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. In 2004, the FBI reopened the Emmett Till case and conducted interviews with surviving eyewitnesses, leading to the identification of several other still-living suspects. In 2017, historian Timothy Tyson published a book on the case, which included a 2007 interview he conducted with Carolyn Bryant. In it, Tyson reports she recanted part of her 1955 court testimony that Till touched her and made lewd comments, a revelation that could have led to her being charged with lying to the FBI. She denied Tyson's account. In December 2021, the Department of Justice formally closed the Emmett Till case. Ida B. Wells wrote, "The way to right wrongs is to turn the light of truth upon them," unquote. While Emmett Till's murderers escaped justice, his short life and his mother Mamie Till Mobley's tireless activism charted the path forward for us all to permanently reject racist terror. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Oh, Helios. Oh, yellow star. Oh, glowing sphere. Gleaming beacon. Brilliant flaming orb. Giver of light, warmth, and radio. Yes, it's true. WGXC's brand new solar panels are installed and ready for deployment, where they'll be calling on the free and plentiful rays of the sun to bring our station close to full sustainability.
To make WGXC a solar-powered radio station.
We are going solar, and WGXC will be a solar-powered community radio station, getting our power from the sun rather than foreign despots.
WGXC loves the sun, and we're going to love it even more now that WGXC is going solar.
This is Tom Rowe in Acro with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report from your solar-powered radio station, WGXC. Well, if you've got windmills around, Sunday is not expected to be too windy, but Monday is expected to be windier, and later in the week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday should be especially windy. There will be some cloud cover on Sunday, but less on Monday, Tuesday, and then more on Wednesday, and then a lot less the rest of the week. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts snow on Sunday, mainly after 9 a.m., with a high of just 31 degrees and wind between 5 and 7 miles per hour. Sunday night, again, snow showers are likely before 7 p.m., low around 29, and a northwest wind from 7 to 13 miles per hour. Monday should be partly sunny with a high of 41 and a low around 29 with a 10 mile per hour wind. Tuesday, isolated showers are possible after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 48 and a low around 37. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Matt Schutel reports in the Washington Post that Bill Fries, an advertising executive with a unique history in one form of radio, died from cancer at the age of 93 on April 1st. Under his stage name, C.W. McCall, Fries hit number one on the pop charts in 1976 with the song Convoy, the most famous musical ode to Citizens Band Radio. Fries first created the character C.W. McCall as a truck driver in a series of commercials for a Midwestern bread company. Then he had top 20 country hits with, quote, Old Home, Fill Her Up, and Keep on Truckin' Cafe, and Wolf Creek Pass, both songs about truck driving. Then his song Convoy, an odd ode to breaking the law on the nation's highways told through CB radio, knocked the Bay City Rollers Saturday Night off the top of the Billboard pop chart in January 1976. The song was a CB radio conversation between Rubber Duck and Pigpen, the CB radio handles of two truckers, and filled with the lingo and code words of Citizens Band Radio of the era. Quote, it was timely, unquote, Fries told the Associated Press in 1990. Quote, back in 1975-76, that craze was sweeping the country. The jargon was colorful, and the American public liked that, too. It was laced with humor, but it had a rebellious feeling about it, and people responded to it, unquote. Convoy sold about 7 million copies and inspired Sam Peckinpah's 1978 film of the same name, starring Kris Kristofferson.
quote, "Well, mercy sakes, good buddy, we gonna back on out of here," unquote, C.W. McCall says at the end of Convoy, with a slight alteration of a trucker's farewell, quote, "Keep the bugs off your glass and the bears off your tail," unquote. Read more about this story in the Washington Post. And here is C.W. McCall's Convoy.
Yeah, Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben, come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean clear to Flagtown, come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we've got us a convoy.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Back off them hogs. 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But they's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears is wall to wall. Yeah, them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a-hunting bear.
Cause we got a great big convoy.
Big Ben. Negatory, Big Ben. You're still too close. Yeah, them hogs are starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them setting on the scales. By the time we hit that shy town, them bears was getting smart. They'd brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears and choppers filled the skies. Well, we shot the line, we went for broke with 1,000 screaming trucks and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Yeah, rubber duck to Sodbuster. Come on there, yeah. 10-4, Sodbuster. Listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's hauling dynamite. He needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but it didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't going to pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I says, let them truckers roll 10-4.
Cause we got a mighty convoy rocking through the night. Yeah, we got a mighty convoy. Ain't she a beautiful sight?
What's your 20? Omaha. Well, they ought to know what to do with them hogs out there for sure. Well, mercy sakes, good buddy. We're going to back on out here, so keep the bugs off your glass and the bears off.